This is the second part of the conversation between Phil and Roslyn Banks. If you haven't listened to the first part of this interview, check your podcast feed.
Hello, and thank you for tuning in to another episode of CPA Review and More. We are pleased to bring you the number one podcast for CPAs and CPA candidates. If you'd like to learn more about how Yeager CPA Review can help you, find us on our website at YeagerCPAReview.com. Now, here's your host, Phil Yeager.
So the farm is still there, correct?
Yes, alive and well.
Alive and well, that's good. And who works it exactly? Who's, is it still profit making or what is it?
Oh yeah, we currently farm over 5,000 acres.
Wow.
We've expanded to Virginia and Arkansas and a little bit in the South. So,
is this a profitable farm or is it losing money?
Absolutely. I mean, it's how we make our living. So it's a lot of what we do is supporting and helping other farmers and get started so that the family farm doesn't go away. You know, there's corporate farms and corporate, but, you know, farming is still a family legacy. A lot of people are wanting to get back into it because of the health reasons. You know, a lot of these organic people want to, you know, get into gardening and it starts with there and then they start on a larger scale. We see a lot of farmers markets pop up, especially here in this area, the rural area, where people will grow their own produce or, you know, things in their backyard and then share it with their community. So it's, while it's not as wide scale as row crop farming, you know, our stuff goes on a barge and goes, you know, overseas and goes a little bit everywhere. It's a commodity. It's not, you know, the produce that people eat at the farmer's market, but our products are in peanut butter. Our products are in wheat. You know, our products are go feed the chickens on the Eastern Shore that people go buy at Purdue. So
what are you doing at the farm? Are you doing the financial stuff?
I do this with the financial operations. Yes.
All right. So you had to learn farm accounting or you knew it a long time?
I did learn. It's kind of like a little bit of real estate and metrics and conversions, you know, the acreage reports, the crop yields, working with the farm insurance and crop insurance and yield reporting and USDA reporting. So it is kind of a own little beast in itself. Not a lot of people do Schedule F farming. When you think of taxes, you think of depreciating cows and horses and, right, you know, things like that. So not a lot of people do it, but it is a very lucrative business.
I remember I was living in New York, New Jersey, when they first asked farm accounting on the CPA exam, right? Now, honestly, I didn't know the rules that much. I mean, I was born in Flushing, New York, and there were there might have been farms there, but I remember I had a study for that, and they did ask questions on farming, and I think they still ask it. It's a sole proprietor, is it 11? What's the form number?
Schedule F.
Schedule F. I'm sorry. Supporting schedule to the 1040, right?
Yes.
And they can be a corporation, right? And file a schedule 1120?
1120S or C, yes.
Can they be LLCs?
Oh, yeah.
So the taxes is probably as important as running the farm itself, isn't it?
More important. Cash flow is everything to a farmer.
Do you give talks on farm accounting to anybody?
Not a lot. I haven't really done that just because most farmers, you know, have their own internal person or they have their set family farm. You know, the people going to the farmers markets, their needs are a little bit different. They're more retail. They're not, you know, having this massive equipment and yield reports and things like that. So they're usually not as large scale. If they are, you can't solo, you know, I'm a solo practice accountant. You can't solo farm. There's no such thing. It really does take a village to support a farm and feed America.
Do you do financial planning for farmers?
Not specifically for my family farm. Yes, I like
to. But other farms?
No, I don't really have a lot of farm clients. Just the family farm is enough for me. You know, just kind of because it's year round and we're in so many different businesses and there's so many different reporting. But, you know, cash flow and projections are going to be everything. Understanding the insurance, understanding payments and the timing of everything. So that is definitely a lucrative, you know, business. You can direct some of your students to niche down into that because it's needed.
The thing is, are you actually more of a consultant than a financial planner is a consultant, correct?
Yeah. Well, so I think a financial planner, you think like a licensed retirement.
CFP or something like that. You don't get involved in that.
No, I don't recommend investment. I don't do investment advice.
So what do you do for financial planning then?
Tax planning. So, you know, I tell my clients, if you're thinking about selling a house or if you inherit something, you know, call me, let me know. If you're going to start a business, let me know. If you're investing and loaning people money, let me know. So I do a lot of the individual planning.
That's really another niche in accounting, isn't it? It's another niche in accounting, financial planning.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's so, you know, people, when people say planning, like I said, most of the time they think of, oh, I don't have enough money. I don't have enough, but you know, we all need to plan. You know, if we don't plan, then if we fail to plan, then we plan to fail.
So I believe
But tax planning is very important, especially when we had new legislation and all this uncertainty, the Congress coming in and changing the law retroactive. People on unemployment, you know, they needed to know how to plan for their taxes, how to plan to pay the IRS if they have a large bill. So planning is one of those all-encompassing words, but for my clients, it's, you know, planning your cash flow, your forecasting. If you're going to start a business and quit your job, this is what you need to expect. These are the estimated payments you need to make to the IRS, or, you know, just put aside. These are the challenges you'll have to face. If you hire employees, this is what you'll have to do. So I like just kind of individual consulting. You know, it's not one size fits all at that point, especially when someone's taken all their life savings and putting it into a business.
A lot of accountants are going into where states sort of legalize it. They're doing cannabis, marijuana accounting, you know. And is in Virginia, is that legalized yet? Did they pass that as being legalized?
So I know the previous governor was all for it. We just got a new governor in January, and I don't know what his position is on it, but I think it's what they farm here doesn't have the THC in it. It's more like retail products or going into something else. So it's not like legal, or not like Colorado, you know, in Vegas, where, you know, you just smell it all everywhere. not here, you know, but, you know, you do drive by the farms and it's like, please do not, you know, take this. This will not get you high type thing. So there's a couple of farms here that we've heard about on the news where people were kind of raiding their crops, you know, thinking they could get high off of it, but they're not. And all these farmers had poured their life savings into it when it was becoming lucrative, when they could start growing it for other purposes. So that was a big thing here in Virginia.
So the farm accounting is probably the same in Virginia because it doesn't have that the drug in it that makes you high. It's just, am I correct? Is there a different type of accounting for farmers doing growing cannabis without the drug in there makes you high? Is that
I don't think the accounting would be different. It'd just be, you know, row crop farming. And then it, depending on who you sell it to and how you sell it and where you sell it, that's where the niche planning would come into. The retail shops that you see with the green crosses in Colorado and other states, you know, they're more like a retail type tax client versus the people that are farming these products that are being used in the oils and things like that. They're more like a traditional farm where they have the fertilizer, the lights and everything to grow it and then distribute it.
I don't know how people feel or how you feel, but in a way that really helped the economy of Colorado, you know, and it is really doing well. I mean, Colorado's economy is booming. I think one of the things, I don't know if it's the whole thing, but growing the marijuana, selling marijuana in these stores and also becoming bakeries, selling brownies. You got my drift there. All right.
Okay. It's big tourism. You know, agritourism is a huge industry. So, you know, that is a lot of tourist dollars into there on top of, you know, just people coming in for the mountains and vacation and football. So
you read a lot and you worked in the Mason School of Business Professional Resource Center, which is a business library. All right. All 4 years of your undergraduate studies at William & Mary. Let me get this straight. You got a degree in finance from William & Mary, right?
Yes.
4 years, a bachelor's degree. All right. Mm-hmm. Now, did you get a fifth year with a master's degree?
No, I did my master's degree separately. So after, straight after college, I went into work for one of the largest retail banks. I worked for
Let me go back here. Where did you go first?
I went to work for Wells Fargo to get like that experience.
Yeah, but I'm saying your education started where?
Oh, education at William & Mary. Yes. So 4 years in finance at William & Mary.
And where'd you go after that as far as education?
UNC Charlotte. I worked full-time and then I went to school in the evenings in person at that new campus they built downtown.
And what did you get that degree in?
That was my master's of accounting degree. So that's where my professors, I took a tax research course, Professor Godfrey, he taught us how to research the Internal Revenue Code. So I liked it because it was a lot of law, you know, the law was codified and he taught us practical things. So we would read the paper, we would see real life cases of how it impacted companies and how it impacted the local community in Charlotte. And so that's when like the aha moment went off in my head, like, I want to be in taxes, you know, not just for the individual portion and not just for the corporates, you know, hey, we're going to do all these loopholes and not pay a lot, but for that in-between hybrid where I can realize I could affect someone's really life savings or prevent them from making big mistakes or keep them out of tax jail. So that's
tax
where.
Jail. You
know,
okay.
Oh yeah. Tax jail.
What do we call that? Tax jail.
You know, the tax evaders.
The pokey? No, go ahead.
Yes, so. Yeah. The tax evaders.
People do that? I don't think they do that. Tax evasion? God, it's hard to believe that. I thought people just pay even more than they have to because they're just good Americans. Okay? All right? Well, you don't have to be American, but I'm just saying, no, I'm just being facetious. But, you know, I like doing tax returns because to me, when a person came in with a problem, it was like a puzzle I had to solve to figure out what's the best way, all right, they can pay the least amount of taxes legally, all right? And then once you saw that, the face, they smiled, and they couldn't thank you enough. And I found, because I was in Colorado at the time doing this, and Denver was a very smaller town. This was 82 to 88. And the people there, right, after I would do whatever I had to, all right, they would bring their family in to meet me, all right? And it made me feel very good about myself, that I was doing something good, you know? And I also, the fact that I could come up with a solution to their problems. And to this day, well, I go to Colorado every once in a while because my family still lives there. But with the CPA Review School, it's also sort of similar in this way. I did the CPA Review School starting in 1977 here. And I've done it for 40 some odd years, still doing it. But what's nice is when someone comes up and says, you changed my life, okay? And I am so glad that you, you know, I wasn't going to take the CPA exam, but I'm so glad I did. It changed my life. And that makes you feel good, all right? Because I never did it just for money and only money, all right? I wanted to get people and change their lives. And really, isn't that similar with taxes?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. And you know what? And even when they say that, I never heard this. Oh, yeah, he really changed my life, but he charged me $300 to do that. I never heard that.
I don't get the complaints about the fees. You know, really, people keep saying you should charge more, you know, and it's because I've been told I had the heart of a teacher. So I really kind of explain to people why they had a balance due or why they're getting a refund. And once you explain them to it, they don't really care. I mean, people care about getting a refund and how much they have to pay, but they usually kind of know what the result is going to be. But they care about how you treat them when you sit across the desk from them and you have their personal information in your hand. They care that you're answering their questions and solving their problems so that they can do things differently. And then you can also teach them like, hey, you know, okay, you paid off your home, that's great, but you're going to lose this deduction. So next year you need to give more to the church or give more to this, or, you know, start putting it in your 401k, or, and that's the kind of planning that they will pay, you know, for, because it yields its own savings. Because most of my clients, you know, it doesn't matter how old they are, they're still thinking long term. So whether they're planning for retirement, they're like, okay, Rosalind, I need you to make this money last for me. I can't afford to pay 50% to the IRS and the state. So I need your advice. I need your brain to help me make this money last so I don't outlive my money.
You ever regret not taking the CPA exam?
No, not at all. Not, it's funny because I talk to a lot of CPAs, and when we were on the 40 under 40 call, a lot of them admit, I don't do taxes. I'm a CPA and I don't do taxes. When people call me, they're like, hey, I need a CPA to do my taxes. And I'm like, well, I'm an EA. Will I fit the bill? And they're like, I don't even know what you are. You know, so they'll call me and ask
me. That's important. Why is it that people don't know what an EA is?
Because, as I said, it's not as popular designation. You know, CPA, when it came out years ago, they were the authority on money and finance. EAs are, like I said, we are the subject matter experts. And so I wanted to kind of just be able to drill down and understand one thing really, really good. So that was another thing that yielded me away from the CPA exam. I was like, I don't really want to learn pension accounting and take the test. Like, I can do it. You know, I can do cost accounting. I had to learn it.
Right.
But I said, I'd rather, you know, just understand a 1031 and understand a like-kind exchange and 1231 and all those other cool loopholes and, you know, special rules than, you know, to understand how to do pension accounting. So that's what sold me on becoming an EA. And then also I was becoming a military spouse. I didn't want to deal with the multiple states and have to do reciprocity. I just wanted federal jurisdiction. I wanted something that would be the same no matter where I went, no matter who I sat across the desk from. And that's taxes, because eventually you all have to pay. Even people that don't make a lot of money, they get the earned income credit. You know, I don't shy away from them. They don't care how much I charge, because they don't want to be taken advantage of either.
Isn't it great they change those rules though every year? Right?
It's for me, because
how do you keep up with all this stuff?
Continuing education. I can't stress the importance of the associations. I found two really good associations that I love, that I'm a member of, and just the people. We do our continued education. I'm thankful for the pandemic, because now we meet virtually via Zoom, but we still have that community of tax professionals. So, you know, we're primarily EAs, and we have a couple of cool CPAs slip through the cracks and join our organization.
Well, how dare they? That's like sabotage, isn't it?
No, I know. I love CPAs. You know, my book is to promote the whole accounting profession. So I don't really see the competition. We just all have a different part of what we do.
You know, it's interesting. Do you know that most people don't know what CPAs do?
I agree.
Just like they don't know what enrolled agents do, all right? So the question is, all right, who should communicate this better? Is there a society of enrolled agents? Is that what it is?
From NAEA, yes.
All right, so how do you promote the EA then? You don't do TV advertising. How, if people don't know what an EA is, that's hurting the profession, isn't it? How do they intend to educate people about enrolled agents? And we know they're not doing a hell of a great job with the CPA, advising people what a CPA does, all right? Do you do anything to advise people about what an EA does?
I do. The book was my book. Last year I wrote a book. It's called Adelaide the Accountant. It's a children's book, but it's for children of all ages. So, you know, it rhymes, it's a picture book, but it really explains what taxes do and what accountants do. There's a glossary in the back that explains what an enrolled agent is, what a CPA is, and just what a staff accountant is. And so that was kind of my promotion for the profession, to promote the profession. And like, because most kids don't grow up and saying, I want to be a CPA, you know, believe it or not.
No, I hear that all the time, you know. My granddaughter, for example, when she was 3 years old, she said, you know, Poppy, she calls me Poppy, I want to be a CPA, all right? And I said, oh, really? I thought this kid's a genius. All right. But she never did say that. All right. And if she said that, I probably would have had her committed. But the thing was, they're reading this book. What's the age of the people reading your book?
The ideal age is about teenage years, or eight. I say eight because I knew early on what I wanted to do because of the family business. And I like numbers because it just made sense. You know, the weather we couldn't control. And farming, just, right. You know, you're just kind of geared towards the weather. But being in the office, dealing with payroll, dealing with invoicing, dealing with numbers just always made sense to me. And so I knew early on I wanted to be in finance and be a CFO and, you know, kind of tell people what to do with their money. And just because I just love it. So the book really is to promote taxes, to get people honest, to get people a positive experience about what taxes are, you know, to not get to think most kids, when they think about taxes, they think about them in April, and either their parents are happy because they get a big refund, or they're mad because, oh, I got to pay the IRS and I'm mad that I got to pay.
It's all your fault.
Mm-hmm. And so I wanted kids to have a neutral experience, to be able to formulate their own opinion about taxes. Not that it's either bad or that it's good or that you're going to get a lot, but it's that it's fair and that we all need to pay our fair share and that we all enjoy the services that tax dollars provide us, whether it's school, education, community helpers, you know, the postal system, you know, what taxes do and how they run in a community. It also promotes entrepreneurship. So at the end of the book, you know, me and my kids go to a farmer's market and we support other entrepreneurs that are trying to build a lasting economic legacy. And, you know, it doesn't say it.
No, I think that's great to show them that, you know, it's self-published, right?
It is. That was a learning experience for me and I'm glad I did it.
And you can buy it on Amazon. All right. Absolutely. And also they sell it at Barnes & Noble.
Absolutely. Target had picked it up. I'm not sure if it's still on their website, but Barnes & Noble and Walmart, all of those guys picked it up.
And do you know what it retails for?
We have a hardcover version on Amazon that I think is about $18. And then, maybe more than that. Maybe the paperback is $18. And then the hardcover is a little bit more expensive because of the pricing during the pandemic. But I've donated copies to libraries here in Virginia and then one in Fort Campbell, Clarksville, Tennessee.
Oh, that's so, very nice. It really is nice.
Like I said, it's more putting it out for the profession.
You're giving back, right?
Giving back. A couple of tax preparers in my group have bought copies to give to their clients. And so that's something I want other CPAs and EAs to do is just, again, use it as a tool to educate and promote the designations in the industry.
Oh, I think that's really great. How's it been selling, by the way? Yeah.
It was really good. It's self-publishing was a feat to learn itself. So October 15th was when I really kicked it off. So I did a lot of in-person sales and had a...
Oh, did you?
And
did
my own. And then
where did you go to do it in person?
I did the local farmers market here and then the local Christmas event here at the firehouse. I just paid to have a vendor booth and just talk to people.
Are you selling it just locally or is it sold all over the country?
It's sold. Independent bookstores can pick it up, you know, through that. I've given copies and put some on consignment at some local bookstores. Because I'm a solo practitioner, you know, I don't have that manpower and marketing dollars to put behind it. So a lot of it has been word of mouth and flyers, social media, Instagram ads, LinkedIn. So it's done really well. The feedback, because it's self-published, the feedback that I get directly is very meaningful. When even another accountant, she told me she read it to her teenage son and she was like, you know, he learned things from the book that I had told him, but it clicked a little bit different. So I recommend all your CPA students to get it and to read it.
Definitely, I would recommend you do that. I have not read the book or seen it, but we've never met each other, have we not?
Right? No, not in person, yeah. No.
But I can usually, after, you know, a few minutes, tell what the person is like, and you are very giving person. you give back to the profession. All right. It says here you have two princess daughters. Okay. All right. Are they on the 40 and the 40 group? Okay. Oh, you got the book. Oh,
this they is nice. They are probably under 10. So I don't know.
Who did the drawing and everything? Who did that?
So the illustrator is in, this is the farmer's market page, but the illustrator, she's in Canada, and I found her with word of mouth through my editor. And it just kind of clicked. I kind of knew the narrative and put it all together.
Yeah, no, it's very professional.
Yeah, it's a picture book. So there's the glossary in the back that kind of breaks down a lot of things. So it's 32 pages. It's short and sweet. You know.
Are you going to put anything about me in the back now? I met Phil Yeager, and he's just a nice person. Well, he has no face, but he has.
You know, people keep asking, you know, is there going to be a sequel? And so I have thoughts. My kids want to self-publish and write their own book. So it won't be a sequel. We'll see some of the same characters, but their entrepreneurial ventures, we're still waiting for that seed money to build up because it was an expensive venture. But that is something that they want to do, is to self-publish and write another book similar to this.
So. And they're learning how to become entrepreneurs. Right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And I'm sorry, how old are they? What's the ages?
Currently 4 and 6.
Wow. Well, wait some a minute. So you have to be 25 years old. You waited a while to have kids, right?
Yes. Yes.
Well, that's great. No, I mean, I think it's wrong with people. Well, it's my opinion. But a lot of people have kids when they're 21 years old. All right. And they're kids. You know, they're. So, that's great. And I've dealt with a lot of military wives. One who's now working at LinkedIn, Miranda Head, all right? Miranda started, for the CPA Review School I had, she started the social marketing thing. And she was great. She learned in and out about LinkedIn. And she now has a full-time job at LinkedIn. She's one of their editors. I don't know what she does, but she's doing very well. And I keep and she has two terrific kids. And she has one little boy. He's not little anymore. His name is Teddy. And when we had our meetings, he would always be there. She'd have him on yesterday. And I'd say, you know, I like Teddy. And Teddy would remember my name, because when she would see a video, Teddy would say, it's Phil. It's Phil. All right. And I said, you know, I'm putting him as a board member. He would put an honorary member of the board. Nicest kid, though. I mean, you know, haven't seen her in a while, but we do keep in touch. Anyway, I want to recommend to everybody, all right, that they contact Amazon, Barnes & Noble, go to their catalog, and look at the first children's book that you have actually written, self-published, Adelaide the Accountant. All right? All right. Can we spell that? Anyway, Adelaide is, I think you have it there. Adelaide is spelled A is an apple. D, oh God, there it is. All right. Gee, that was not planned. She has her own cue cards. Very professional. But I would recommend it. This is a very nice woman. And I don't say that about everybody, but, you know, very nice person. And thank you so much for being on this podcast. And I hope you enjoyed being on it, you know, and you gave a lot of good information. I probably could have asked a lot more questions, but, you know, I didn't want to, too much is no good sometimes, but you just, it was the perfect amount of information that was given out. Is there anything else you want to say?
Well, I was just going to say thank you for having me on the podcast. I really enjoyed the sessions that you had that I've listened to. I've listened to a couple of so far. I listened to the tax attorney that you had on. So I'm glad I didn't get to bore people with a bunch of numbers and figures. If they want any of that numbers, like what's my standard deduction, they can definitely check out my website, AdelaideRoseTax.com. Follow me on Instagram and LinkedIn. I'll post this podcast episode there. I look forward to, you know, just kind of living up to the hype of being a 40 under 40. You know, it really does require us to level up as millennials, thinking outside of the box, having this future of pretty much, you know, the whole financial infrastructure, because people don't realize how in-depth CPAs, you know, do or what they do. You know, we're just these superheroes wearing capes and glasses and pocket protectors. But, you know, really the backbone of the economy is on our shoulders. So, if you're sitting for the exam and you don't really take it seriously, you have to ask yourself, is this really where I want to be? Because there's a lot of responsibility that goes into being someone's fiduciary, to doing someone's tax return, even though you may think it may be beneath you or that it's easy or that it's trivial. It's not. Anytime you're handling someone's personal financial information, it's very personal. It's a lot of responsibility. It's a privilege that I don't take lightly. So I encourage people to, you know, to do it. You can make a good career just being honest and just being ethical, no matter what you do, but having the designation, the letters behind your name, says more about you and, you know, the career and what you want to put into you, what you do in the lives that you touch. So, I definitely recommend get a CPA designation, get an EA, be an NTPI fellow. You know, all of those letters behind your name mean something. And so I do encourage I challenge the next generation to level up, to take the exams and to take the continuing education seriously, because, you know, the financial system, as we've seen during the pandemic, when it shuts down or when it stops, yeah, or when there's bad apples, then it really does do more harm than it does good.
And actually, accountants, a lot of people changed what they were doing and they went into these PPP loans, you know, had to fill out the paperwork. And I spoke to a few people. They changed their practice totally. All right. So there's always a niche to go into as an accountant. So anyway, I want you to take care of yourself, Rosalind, and be well. And I wish the same to your family. And if you do ever get up to DC, I will take you to lunch, any place you want to go. All right. You have my phone number. I think you do have my phone number. All right. But if you don't, you can call me. All right. And love to meet you. All right. And by the way, it's okay with my wife. Right, Bun? Oh, did you hear what she said? I said, if you don't have my phone number, call me. Is that what I said? All right. It must have been that cannabis I was talking about. But anyway.
No, I look forward to meeting you in person, you and your wife. I look forward to, you know, more interviews and more podcasts.
Anytime you want to come on, just let me know.
Okay.
Right? I try to do updates. An annual thing. Okay. Yeah, like same time next year, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'll may or may not have on the same polo.
All right. Well, if you get one that fits, I'd love to wear that. But okay. Maybe not in pink. Yeah, I like pink anyway. All right, but anyway, ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank you for listening. Every Tuesday, we have a new topic every Tuesday. And I think what makes this podcast different is it really is a true discussion. We don't set this up in advance. And people have told me they like it. It's actually, I'm fun to listen to. All right, I think that's before they smoked the cannabis. But anyway, all right, please. You have any suggestions? Send them to me. All right. And I will try to get a guest on that area. All right. So I wish you all well. And I think the most important thing we have to remember is we've just gone through at least 2 years of a terrible pandemic. Doesn't seem to be ending though. But please, what I'm finding is people are not nice to each other. They become more rude, crude, name it what it is. Please. Be nice to each other, all right? Because all we have is each other, right? Absolutely. So anyway, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much. And please watch and listen to CPA Review and More. This is Phil Yeager, and thanks again for watching.
Thank you so much for listening to Yeager CPA Review and More. As a token for our appreciation for your listenership, we'd like to offer you 10% off your next purchase with Yeager CPA Review. Save between $50 to $150 with code PODCAST10. If you'd like more information, look us up on JaegerCPAReview.com. And as always, if you've enjoyed this show, please rate and review on iTunes or your preferred listening platform. Again, thank you so much for listening, and we look forward to you tuning in next time.